This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at the Home Depot and on homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hello, welcome to another edition of Nerdificent. I am one half of your host, Danny Fernandez. Today I'm joined by two of my dear friends that I've known for years, for actual years, and I'm really excited for them to tell you about their podcast because I've been involved in a way. But today we are talking about doujinshi, which if you don't know what it is, we're going to get into it. And I'm joined by hosts and writers and my close personal friends, Emma Fife and Chris Lamb.
Hello.
Hi. Thank
it's
you.
So great to virtually be here.
I know. I miss us. I guess we're kind of like we always see each other at events.
Right.
Like cons and parties and premieres.
It's been one of the weirder things, I think, is that, you know, even people in our profession who largely are freelancers, and you often are working independently at home unless for whatever reason, you know, you're lucky enough, like, oh, you're in a writer's room or you're on set that day or whatever. There is a lot of sort of independent work that goes into it. But because a lot of what we do work-wise takes us out to events, I feel like I'm often so busy that conventions are when I see all of my friends that I would normally just see in Los Angeles anyway, but we never have time for each other in LA.
I know. Chris, do you feel the same way?
I do. That's kind of one of the things about having good taste in friends and aligning yourself with people, you know, who know their stuff, is that they are successful. And oftentimes that means that it can be hard to catch up, but, you know, it's definitely something that I try to accept, but it's also hard re-accepting it in this different context, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because I was really mixed about Comic-Con being canceled because that's so many people. Like, I feel for the artists. Like, I feel for the people who really bank on making a lot of money at that time, and that's like... time to shine. For me as a creator, it was kind of like, it felt like I could catch my breath. Like, you know, and it was just like, it's an honor and a privilege to be able to do as much as we do. However, con season is just kind of one thing after another after another. And sometimes I believe in like quality over quantity, I would say. And so it's just nice getting... To me, it was like so mixed because it was like, I have so much anxiety, especially as an extroverted introvert. I feel like that is a thing, maybe.
Yes, no,
like all of us are, where we like are very passionate about our craft and really good at what we do, and we're like on camera, but when we're off camera, it's kind of like, okay, this is my little shell and please don't invade my bubble. I'm really, you know. And so just the whole anxiety, and I think there's an extra level of, it's become really Hollywood. Like, it's I've been going since I was 11, and it's really Hollywood now. Like, they have shows they promote that aren't even nerdy. It'll just be like
Kevin can wait, or like,
totally.
You know, I mean, young Sheldon, I guess, is nerdy, but still it'll be.
Yeah, it's true. Like there is with San Diego Comic-Con particularly, there is this very extreme level of marketing that's going on. And yet, because you do still have your, you know, obviously in recent years they've pulled out, but until very recently, you would have your big Marvel Cinematic Universe panel and you would have your big Marvel Television panel and your Warner Brothers panel. And so you did feel like you still really had to be there or you were going to be missing out on something. I know exactly how you feel about Danny, because I felt the same way, where I was like, it's kind of a relief in some ways. But on the other hand, then in my like Instagram memories, a picture came up of like me and Xander Genre, I think, like out drinking on that Wednesday when everyone's first getting into town in San Diego. And I was like, I don't know. It is really fun, though. So, yeah,
I was going to say what I feel about it being Hollywood is it turns into like, hey, did you get into this party?
Yes.
And who got into this party? And can you get me into this party? And it's just so like, that's not what it is. It reminds me of exactly what happened to us when we were kids.
Yes,
like
exactly.
When we were nerds and now we're being treated like nerds again because you're not cool enough to get to this other party.
Invited to the variety party.
Right. And it's like, oh, you didn't get into the EW party? Okay, well, you know, maybe we'll meet up with you after. And it's just like, right. Y'all, it's just like, I did not live
it's
my
like,
life
come
as
on,
a nerd.
Come on, we're not going
to
get in. Let's just
to
get
let,
food.
Yeah,
let's
these food. Popular Hollywood people make me feel bad.
It's so.
And so that's the other side I think that a lot of people don't see, for at least for us. And so when it was postponed or canceled or whatever, I was like, oh my gosh, the idea that I'm not going to have to deal with the flaunting who, you know, who's at this and who got on what panel, who is doing so much. And
totally.
It's just like, that to me.
I will say that just on the sort of opposite end of the San Diego Comic-Con spectrum, what I have found to be, I mean, obviously there are tons of small conventions around the world that really are more focused on celebrating people coming together to enjoy something that they love, as opposed to, as you say, be seen at a party. But I will say that my experience with Star Wars Celebration was much more like those small conventions, where just like everyone at Star Wars Celebration was there because they loved Star Wars. There weren't any cool parties that people were worried about getting into. Everybody who normally are peers who are in, again, at that level at San Diego Comic-Con, of possibly some of them do get invited to the EW party. And if you're not one of them, then you're not doing as well as everybody else. At Star Wars Celebration, like, everyone was just hanging out at the Marriott bar. It was
so nice.
So much more low key. And it really was so much fun. It was so, so much fun. So yeah, conventions, they're a mixed bag, but, you know, I do.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like apples and oranges at this
point. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's I do love San Diego Comic Con has been like my, you know, home and love and stuff since my family's from San Diego. So it's been a huge part of my growing up. It was just watching it change, I think, is why I was kind of just like relieved to get a break from it, because it has turned very, like I said, Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And so it just is kind of, for me, I was like, oh, finally, I don't have to deal with like the Hollywood networking, like media con that it has become, and, you know, can geek out about things with my friends on this podcast.
Yeah.
And speaking of geeking out, as y'all know, every week we talk about something that we're nerding out about. And Chris, I wanted to ask you first, is there anything that you're super into right now?
I'm so happy you asked that. So I think for me, I'm really excited about, you know, amidst everything going up in flames and us in this time of upheaval right now, I have been anticipating the game Ghost of Tsushima.
Ooh.
And
can you tell people what it's about that don't know?
Yeah, so it is a RPG made by Sucker Punch. It was announced in 2017, 2018, I believe. And they were really inspired by Kurosawa films, basically, the very famous black and white samurai films. If you're not familiar with them, I was not until I heard about Ghost of Tsushima. That's how I get into a lot of things through video games. And I've been actually watching Kurosawa films in kind of preparation for the game, and it's been really, really educational. And the actor that he has in the two movies that I watched, Seven Samurai and Yojimbo, he is very, very hot. He's dead now, but he's hot.
Oh,
he was
okay.
Hot. I think you would really like him, Danny.
No, I mean, I feel that way about the guy who plays Satan in The Howling Man. He's passed, but he'll live on very hotly in my heart.
Yeah. He just has that level of drip before, like, drip was invented, you know?
Like, yes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. You know, like, he has, like, there's, like, this really great picture. I should send it to you. Like, there's this great picture where he has, like, he does that thing where, like, he takes his arm and, like, he puts it back into his shirt. And, like, he is, like, rubbing his 5 o'clock shadow, like, through the neck hole of his yukata kimono situation. Very daddy.
That was really hot that you did it, though.
Yeah.
It was cute.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I try.
What about you, Emma? What are you geeking out about?
Oh, well, I finally came around to playing Persona 5 Royal. So I'd played the original Persona 5, which was released in 2016. Or maybe it was early 2017. Somewhere in that time period. And I had been wanting to play Royal Edition, which is just like the expanded remastered version. They've added a bunch of new characters and new gameplay elements that actually are really, really good. It makes it totally worth replaying a 100-plus-hour game. But I had not necessarily been ready to jump into it. So it came out right before the Final Fantasy VII Remake was released. It came out like end of March, and Final Fantasy VII Remake came out April 10th. So I went... Yep. I don't really want to get into this when I know that I'm going to start the Final Fantasy VII Remake. And then when I finished Remake, I went, I don't really have the emotional energy for Persona 5 yet. But then all of a sudden I was struck with, I needed to play this game. And it has been so, so much fun, particularly to play it on my Twitch stream with an audience. It's just, I'm loving all of the changes that they made to the game. The new characters are all super interesting. I just met the school psychologist who is a new addition to Royal Edition. And like, let me tell you, he keeps offering me to come to his office to have some snacks.
Wow.
And I'm like,
you
a snack unto yourself. Like,
wow.
This isn't anything new to the original game, though, Danny, just to let you know.
No.
There are adults that have a crush on a high school boy. It's very complicated and problematic.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I don't pay attention.
No, yeah, but no. This, I
please don't write me. I do not play this game. I don't know what you guys were talking about. I just heard.
No shame. Just know that there is equally as intense things happening in the original.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
This
has not crossed any lines as of yet.
Gotcha.
But I, Emma, an adult woman, am into this character, an adult man. Let me be
right,
clear.
Right. There's gameplay. There's role playing.
Yes, there's role playing for sure. I mean, it is a role playing game. So, yeah.
You're right. The thing that I'm geeking out about is actually an artist named Sailor Jubbs. She's Julia Mello. She's a Brazilian artist, and she was taking commissions because she just moved and wanted to pay for her apartment. And so I bought up a bunch of commissions and had her do my friends. And so she did amazing artwork. Like, some of y'all saw it on my feed. It was so real. She got Danielle Radford, who's been on our Buffy episode, Joelle Monique, who is our producer, who's listening right now. She did Sabina Graves, who was on our Haunted Mansion episode. She did my friend Kat Andrusko, but so spot on.
Yeah.
And I can tell y'all, this is such a great gift. It wasn't even that much. Like, she was, you know, she had full body or half body commissions where she would do a portrait of your friends. And it's like such a great surprise.
Yeah.
Or like, if it's someone's birthday, it was Sabina's birthday, so I sent hers to her. But like, it was just so spot on, and it helped this independent artist pay for her apartment, and it also was a great gift for my friends. So again, she goes by @SailorJubs. It's JUBS, and she is such a great artist and just really kind.
Yeah, when you posted those photos, artwork rather, I scrolling through, I didn't have to like see who was tagged in which picture. I knew exactly who everybody was. Yeah,
but it was so great, and it was just like, we all have different skin tones, we all have different hair textures, and like, she was just able to capture everybody's beauty. That was just, I just thought she did such a great job. So props to her.
I
we are talking about art today.
Hey. Our whole transition.
It's about art.
Nice.
So for people who don't quite know or haven't heard the term doujinshi, yes, like what is that?
Well, it is very simply fan created works that are typically derivative of an existing piece of fiction. So while in the States, I think we tend to think of it as only being fan created comics, it also is a term that applies to like fan art collections or to published light novels. The key is that it is people self-publishing. Like I said, it is largely work that is derivative of other works, but it's not necessarily like bottom line has to be in order to be considered doujinshi.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the way I was going to explain it to people is like, if you know fan fiction, mm-hmm, which is like if you read, say, Harry Potter fan fiction, you sure know that's not written by J.K. Rowling or any of the other authors that have been involved. It is by fans. Mm-hmm. And so this is fan created art. Mm-hmm. So it looks like manga. It looks like a comic book. Very beautiful drawing. Some of them, I mean, you can't really tell the difference between the original manga.
100%. Yes. I mean, you definitely come across doujinshi creators who are real good at mimicking the art style of the original.
Yeah, so the only difference between mainstream manga and original doujinshi is that doujinshi is not published by a publishing company. So
correct,
it's self-published.
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of the same way that fan works and honestly, you know, like let's plays on video games, right?
Sure.
Like it's all done with the unspoken agreement between the fan community and the original creator that like, you know, okay, like, you know, I won't do anything because this is really good for the community and I want to support other artists. And this is a great way for artists to get their work out by using, you know, a pre-existing IP. So, but if they wanted to, they could do things.
So what was the first doujinshi that you stumbled upon?
Ooh, well, let me see. I really think I was aware of doujinshi in the same way that a lot of people in the U.S. become aware of doujinshi. And what I do believe is generally the attitude that a lot of Westerners have towards doujinshi is that it is all adult in nature, shall we say. So I think the first sort of doujinshi that I ever came across, it was just I was really into this this computer game called Ragnarok Online. And for whatever reason, there was just an influx of doujinshi that was, you know, kind of the tentacle porn variety, shall we say?
Really?
Oh, yeah. Which I came across. But I definitely also, as I got more involved in fandom and in fan works, the first ones I can remember where there was really like a story to be followed and they weren't all necessarily like really explicit in nature, though they were like shonenai stories or like boys love, which is a big subgenre within doujinshi in particular. But it was like Gundam Wing because that was airing on Toonami in like early 2000s, I want to say. And so at that point, we had also like just gotten high speed internet. And I did what all, not all, but many, many young women who get into that particular show or any other number of shows where the majority of characters are the primary characters are young, attractive men, you know, bishonen. And I started off being like, I don't really like any of the girls on this show. I'm going to write fan fiction. And I was writing like Mary Sue's, which if you don't know what a Mary Sue is, it's a very idealized female character, often seen as sort of a self-insert when creating fan works. But then I pivoted completely into being like, no, I want these boys to kiss each other. So I would say that there was definitely some like Hero Duo, Gundam Wing Doujinshi that I, and it was the same thing where it's like, I started with like dipping my toe, even though again, I'd gone like full tentacle porn and I was like, I need to step back from this. So then it was like, oh, this is like
kind of a nice love story and like they kiss, but it's not anything explicit, or maybe they even just hold hands. But, you know, then I pivoted into full on pornography. But yeah.
Wow. Mm. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, so I can remember it like it was yesterday. It was Naruto and Sasuke. Easily.
Nice. Solid.
Easily Naruto and Sasuke. And I definitely was kind of in the similar trajectory of like, okay, you know, this is Shonen Ai, which is known to be not porn.
Yeah.
You know, it's very light romance. It's about the romance, not about the sex, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was like, this is a little boring for me. I want something a little bit more raunchy than this. I want to see them actually do things. And so I looked further. I found what I wanted. And I also found a lot more Naruto ships, because, I mean, there's so many characters in there, obviously. It's a treasure trove, really. Asuma-sensei, Kakashi, and Iruha-sensei. And then I think that was kind of like my gateway into hentai proper, and then my gateway into actual porn with real people. Mm-hmm. There was this weird trajectory. I'm pretty sure I've told Emma this before on the podcast live, where I had this weird sense of like, oh, these aren't real people, and so like I'm better than most of the people that are actually watching actual porn. Like, that's for the really raunchy and sinful people in this world. And then I just joined them.
That's so funny to be like, I'm observing art.
Yes. Yeah. That I think that is exactly the attitude that a lot of people have is, yeah, you're like, these are drawings. This is artwork. Somebody like took the time to do this.
I mean, they are very beautiful, meticulous art.
Yeah.
But also boobies.
Also, yep. Yep.
Mine was, I talked on y'all's podcast, and mine was Vegeta and Bulma from Dragon Ball Z, because I think when you look for, it's the same reason you reach out and read fan fiction, mm-hmm. is when you're looking up doujinshi, is because you're looking for more, you want to like see the things that they're not showing on the show.
Yes, exactly right.
Yes.
Exactly right.
Yeah. So you're like, what is happening when they're not fighting? What is happening when the TV turns off? Mm-hmm. And so, so that's why I was looking up Vegeta and Bulma, and they have beautiful, great, also very sexual strips, you know, these manga strips, mm-hmm. Of them. So we're actually going to dive into the history of doujinshi right after this.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Paid by UpLevel Rewards. Paid participation required after portrayal.
Attention all listeners. Are you ready to earn $750? Well, get ready, because I'm about to introduce you to GetMy750.com, the ultimate way to earn. Here's the scoop. Instead of just streaming shows or playing games on your phone for nothing, you have the chance to earn additional cash. That's right. From trying out new subscriptions to playing your favorite mobile games, you can get extra cash in your pocket. Simply sign up at GetMy750.com and follow the instructions to start earning immediately. So, what are you waiting for? Turn your favorite apps into real cash with GetMy750.com. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to earn rewards for things you're already doing on your phone. Check out GetMy750.com today. That's right. Get started right now at GetMy750.com. Just go to GetMy750.com. Or Google Get My 750 Cash. Follow the simple instructions and get your $750. That's GetMy750.com. GetMy750.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com. That's RiteRug.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
And we're back. I'm still here with Emma and Chris. We're trying to not be too spicy, just spicy enough. Because y'all are gonna go and look at, you know, we will tweet some of our favorites that we're allowed to post publicly.
Yeah. So we'll get more into this as we get deeper into the history of doujinshi. But one of the reasons that doujinshi has been able to continue to exist without any pushback from publishers is because it doesn't have mass market distribution.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. They can sell it, though, because you can buy. Mm-hmm. So technically, mm-hmm. they are making money off of. To me, it kind of reminds me, though, like we were just talking about Comic-Con, when you go to Artist Alley 100%. And there are prints of completely. Iron Man.
Yeah.
And so that artist is able to make, you know, their own art in their style, but using an IP, a Marvel IP, but however they can make money off of it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Usually the way that I've noticed that a lot of people sell it, if they decide to sell it online, you know, like publicly, like easily findable, is they won't name the IP that it's from or the character, right? Mm-hmm. It'll be like, you know, if they're selling like a Sailor Moon fan thing,
sure.
it'll be like, a lot of princess something.
Yeah.
That reminds me of like in Mexico, there's Dragon Ball Z toys and it'll just be Power Up
the
Man.
Bootleg ones.
And it'll be like,
right, exactly.
The bootleg. Yes, it'll just be like, but it'll be Superman's body and Goku's hair. It was
amazing. Amazing.
Golden Power Boy.
Yes. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So the history of doujinshi, the pioneer among doujinshi magazines, was actually Morning Bell. It was published in the early Meiji period since 1874. It's not a literary magazine, but it played a big role in spreading the idea of doujinshi. So the first magazine to publish doujinshi novels was Library of Odds and Ends. It was founded in 1885 by writers Ozaki Koyo and Yamada Bimyo. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That it was all the way back then.
Yeah.
I also love the name Library of Odds and Ends. I think that's such a cute name.
I know. Yeah. It sounds like it could be like a cute Netflix show that they like visit different eclectic places.
Yeah. It is. It's really interesting to see people that are pioneering in the field of like self-publishing or publishing fan derivative works. It's amazing to think like, oh, man, because, I mean, you think about it. I bet that back in the day, in the days of like the Greeks and Greek mythology, there were people out there that were writing fan fiction about
How
the
funny.
Gods. I mean, that's basically what it was. It was all just like word of mouth stories being like, yo, have you heard this story about Zeus? No, tell me more, you know?
Right. I mean, like, who owns the rights to that? Nobody.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So fast forward to Comiket, which is the world's largest comic convention. Is that still true to this day?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean,
pretty sure. Yeah.
It certainly, in terms of the distribution of doujinshi, Comiket is like the event.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I would say that Comiket is actually so well known that it's actually featured in like slice of life anime, where
all
it
the
takes
time.
Place in the real world. You know, like especially right when you have anime that's about like mangaka or people that really love drawing or people that are into yaoi, which, yes, there are animes that are now about people that like yaoi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and can you tell people what yaoi is for people that don't know, yaoi and yuri?
I would love to, Danny. Thanks so much. Yaoi is basically manga that is implied to be smutty that's usually between two men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with very large hands.
How funny. Okay, so Comiket, which is the world's largest comic convention, we fast forward a century, is held twice a year in Tokyo, Japan. And the first one was held in December 1975 with only 32 participating circles and an estimated 600 attendees. However, about 80% of them were female, which I find so fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
guess
us
what?
Repping, yeah.
Because women were having a hard time getting published. Imagine mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. So I think that is why there is a lot of participation from women. And also, as Chris and I have talked about pretty extensively, even on this episode of the podcast up to this point, there is this big market for yaoi and shonenai stuff, which wouldn't necessarily be published by publishers because you're dealing with a taboo subject of homosexuality, even though a lot of the time the shonenai and yaoi stuff is a little problematic because it's really women projecting their sexual fantasies into a scenario wherein there are no women. It's gotten a lot better in more recent years. But yeah, I mean, because of that, it was allowing women to put work out there to be purchased by other women.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing is, I don't know if you like so much of doujinshi, at least the ones that I am into, is very romantic.
Mm-hmm.
It's very like heavy. You can feel that. Even the men, we talked about this on my episode of
yeah.
your show, that the men are kind of drawn in a feminine way.
There's so much really female gazy Bulma and Vegeta doujinshi. It's kind of amazing, especially when you consider the fact that Dragon Ball on a base level
right.
is marketed
yeah.
towards men, towards boys
yeah.
specifically.
Yeah.
But the fact that, you know, you do have all of these women fans, I think that's another reason why you do see so many doujinshi creators and doujinshi circles. So like creators kind of all come together when it comes to doujinshi. And unlike in manga, where typically it's the same person who's drawing and writing the story, with doujinshi, a lot of the time you will find like, oh, so-and-so did the art, but some other person did the story, or somebody did the backgrounds. And like, they're ultimately kind of giving more credit than like a single mangaka who certainly has assistants. But I think, yeah, it's like you're also dealing with all of these women that enjoy media that is more targeted towards men, but they're getting something out of it. And so, as you say, Dani, like, they want to write those stories of what we're not seeing when they're not fighting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of this sense of removing the male gaze and just really making work that appeals to that sensibility, right? Because, you know, obviously, probably men were still inserting themselves into everything
yeah.
back then.
Yeah.
So,
which isn't to say that there's not a lot of really weird, you know, objectifying of women that happens in doujinshi and stuff that's really male gazy. Oh, that is very much out there as well.
Absolutely.
Right. And I think.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to also mention, like, I wanted to kind of emphasize how secretive this whole, especially yaoi, had to be
mm-hmm.
back then, right? Because it even came in the term which we discuss in our podcast. Of the term fujoshi, which is referring to the women that enjoy yaoi and shonenai. And basically, roughly translated, it means rotten women.
Yeah,
like
rotten woman.
Like fermented rotten, you know, like
yeah.
smelly, yeah.
Yep.
So okay, so women who enjoy gay art
mm-hmm.
essentially are
yeah.
seen as mm-hmm. rotten, but is that term also for the men, or is it just the women that are?
So it's a really interesting situation, because, you know, we've talked a lot about shonenai and about yaoi, which is created almost exclusively by women and for women. There's another completely separate subset of like gay porn, effectively, in the doujinshi market, which is bata, which is like that is actually created like for gay men. It's very it's very
oh,
strange.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so I wasn't aware that yaoi was mainly for women.
It's for women, and it's almost exclusively created by women.
I did not.
I know. Isn't that fascinating?
Well, Chris, I mean, I hope this is okay because we're such close friends, but like, was that, I mean, when you said that you were watching, yeah, like, or looking at yaoi, like when you were, maybe before you came out or whatever, like, I guess I'm trying to say, like, is it, mm-hmm. since it's just for women, but it seems like a lot of gay men are consuming it and finding
yeah,
it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I definitely think we're in a point right now where a lot of men have been inspired by
okay.
yaoi that was originally started by women. And now there are plenty of gay artists that I do follow that also participate in this, yaoi scene. But yeah, definitely. I think it would be more apt to kind of talk about, I think Emma also has plenty of examples too, about just like kind of the, maybe the aspects of problematicness that we've seen, because I think they're pretty common. Like the most common that I've seen is like two guys and then this guy who's like, you know, a ladies man. He's like, oh, you know, I usually don't go for guys, but you know, I'm in love with you.
That happens a lot.
It's a common trope in porn, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, another thing that comes up a lot, I feel like, is again, it's even though it is two men, there's still very clearly defined roles as far as right. like who the more feminine one is, oh, gotcha, the more yeah. submissive one, and which one mm-hmm. is the like dude in this relationship. And as I say, like this is something that has gotten better over time. But you know, especially if you look at some early examples, it's like, yeah, okay, well, all right, this is about two men, but really it's about women being okay with enjoying sex. Like
truly, that's what I think of, you know, and Emma, you prefaced this before we got, you know, at the top of this yeah. episode, but doujinshi is not just sexual.
No, it's not.
Not at all.
No,
like there are entire threads and volumes that don't have sex. It's just when you're, this is often a lot of kids that are into anime. It's kind of like what we're all saying. Like this is our, the break between this and like actual people are watching porn, like when mm-hmm. we're exploring, I think I found it in middle school. Mm-hmm. And so you're kind of just like, who are these characters that I trust, right? It feels like a safe space because this is like your animated show that you're into, but it has some adult themes. Most anime does.
Yeah.
And so now you're kind of saying like, oh, this is their dating life. Oh, okay. So this is, okay, they've gone on a couple of dates now and they like each other and now they're going to possibly explore sleeping together. Like it's kind of like a yeah. YA novel, like
oh totally.
So they're not all yeah, they're not all sexual, and like I really do no. want to say that it's a lot of them is just like regular comic books.
Oh yeah, and even as you say, some of the ones that are sexual, it does have that gradual build up to characters being intimate with one another, and so I you know I think as far as doujinshi goes, it in some ways, Japan's almost more respectful of fan derivative works than the US is, because again, as we saw, this kind of publication has been going on in Japan since the 1800s, which is crazy. But which isn't to say that it hasn't been happening in the US, and certainly, you know, early examples of fan fiction and things in order to get any sort of distribution prior to the internet would appear in things like science fiction magazines and other little publications like that. But I think that there's this weird stigma in the US against fan fiction that is getting better, of like that somehow it does not take skill. It is not art. And yeah, in some respects, sure. But Japan really has this attitude with doujinshi of, well, these artists need to get experience. They need to get some kind of exposure. And so, you know, big publishing companies are absolutely looking at what's out there in the doujinshi market and going, hey, this person's really good. We should hire them to do something. And in addition to, again, providing you with an outlet to just create and not have to worry about creating the world, just taking characters that you already know and you already like, all of that is really positive. And then, as you say, Danny, there is the sexual aspect of it as well, because again, it is not exclusively adult in nature, but the stuff that is, you as a teen, because I'm same as you, I think I read my first doujinshi when I was in middle school or early high school, and you are then able to kind of like explore your sexuality in a really safe way.
Yeah, and talk to the most of like the places that I would frequent had like chat rooms and stuff mm-hmm. that I was in, and we would talk about the doujinshi that we had read or the fan yeah. fiction that we had read. We would link the fan fiction that we liked, and it's just, you know, I was just thinking about this as I'm like working on this show right now that has middle schoolers as the main characters.
Sure.
And it's really fascinating because it's such a necessary, you know, they're not quite little kids anymore.
Right.
They're not quite adults, and like it's still a necessary conversation for both middle school and high school. I think the hands-off approach of like pretending that they're not going to get, you know, exploring or whatever is so not helpful. Yeah. And I think a lot of times people try to spin it to be perverse. Like, well, you're talking about kids and sex. It's like, no, but also I lost my virginity when I was a teenager. And it would be great if I had, you know, a lot of us lose our virginities as teenagers. And like, it's in most media, most shows that you watch about high schoolers or college, I mean, or college kids, but like most shows that you watch that have high schoolers or movies that have high schoolers, they're exploring. And I think that it's instead of a hands off, like you can't watch this, you can't look at this, you can't whatever,
right,
is more like, let me make sure you have the resources so you know what consent is, so you know what if you need protection and think like, I'm just so in the opposite direction where I'm very like, and that's what I mean when I say sex positive. And it's like, you know, I lost my virginity to another teenager. So it wasn't like, you know, those things happen and that's okay. And we need to like normalize having these conversations about like not, I mean, I had to hide everything from my parents. And I think that's why people, when they hear doujinshi or anime, even when they hear anime, they immediately think of tentacle porn and hentai and like, and it's just seen as like, that's one aspect of it.
Yeah.
But another is just kind of exploring these, what dating is like when you're in middle school and high school. I think my first boyfriend, you know, we only like made out or whatever, but like, I think my first boyfriend was in middle school. And it's, so it's like, you're starting to develop. And even if my parents were like, no, don't do it, I'm still going to do it. And so it's just like allowing kids to have art and literature that is treats them like in a respectable way of what they're dealing with and not like they're dumb, like, you know, idiots that don't know what's going on.
That's a really good point, because I never really thought about it, but really it was doujinshi that gave me a sense of representation actually for the first time in my life.
Sure.
Yeah. Like literally it was fan works.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there needs to be, like, I think just a level of respect for this art and think of the people that are making them. They probably are also dealing with those issues of sexual identity.
Totally.
Repression.
Repression, not being able to come out to their family. So this has definitely been a safe space, I feel, for a lot of us. We have to take a really quick break. I have so much more to talk about doujinshi. We're going to talk about a little bit more of its history and the future right after these messages.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Paid by UpLevel Rewards. Paid participation required after portrayal.
Attention all listeners. Are you ready to earn $750? Well, get ready, because I'm about to introduce you to GetMy750.com, the ultimate way to earn. Here's the scoop. Instead of just streaming shows or playing games on your phone for nothing, you have the chance to earn additional cash. That's right. From trying out new subscriptions to playing your favorite mobile games, you can get extra cash in your pocket. Simply sign up at GetMy750.com and follow the instructions to start earning immediately. So, what are you waiting for? Turn your favorite apps into real cash with GetMy750.com. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to earn rewards for things you're already doing on your phone. Check out GetMy750.com today. That's right. Get started right now at GetMy750.com. Just go to GetMy750.com. Or Google Get My 750 Cash. Follow the simple instructions and get your $750. That's GetMy750.com. GetMy750.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. visit RightRug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
We are back. I'm still here with Emma and Chris. So for people that are new to doujinshi, or like, what is this word they keep saying? What are some like famous anime that have really cool doujinshi that you would be like, oh, if you're into this, you should check out this?
Okay, listen, I went full tilt into doujinshi again as an adult. Again, as a teen, I was real good at the internet. I was finding all this doujinshi. I was reading that Gundam Wing stuff. I was reading the Dragon Ball, Sailor Moon, all of it. What really tilted me right back into it is actually Yuri on Ice.
Nice.
Okay, so
nice.
For people that don't know that anime, yeah, can you explain it to them?
Yuri on Ice is a gay figure skating anime. It's beautiful. It also was kind of, I don't want to say revolutionary, but it was important from the perspective of it really was amidst all of the amazing figure skating drama. By the way, I watched this show like it was real figure skating. I was like freaking out when people would skate. But there is this very wholesome gay love story in it that's not really refuted. It's so interesting because there's a scene in it where the two main characters kiss. But Yuri's just finished skating, and so like Victor like jumps onto the ice to give him a hug, and like the angle of his arm is such that you can't see that the two of them are kissing. But like, it was mostly Western fans that were like, "Oh, that was a cheap shot." And did they kiss? I don't know. And the creator was basically like, "Well, it was in Japan. Nobody needed any additional confirmation." But again, you're dealing with a disconnect of cultures there. Mm-hmm. I think. So there's a lot of real good Yuri on Ice. There's a lot of good doujin.
What about you, Chris? Is there anything that you would recommend for people to like Google or look up if they're like wanting to get into it?
That depends if they want to dip their toes in or if they want to jump in head first.
What is one that's like not sexual that you guys are like, this, you know, anyone could read this?
Well, I will say that because I think that's one of the reasons that I like the Yuri on Ice stuff is because it has a range. There's a lot of nice slice of life stories in there, and there's a lot of nice hardcore stuff in there too. I would say, and again, we're getting into that conversation of it's teenagers. Like, how can you talk about teenagers sleeping with each other? And that goes back to what you were saying, Danny.
Twilight.
Yeah.
Although I guess he was like 300 years old.
You know what?
But
gross.
He was a perpetual teen. But Twilight, like when I think of, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but when I think of the doujinshi that I was into, it was like adjacent to Twilight.
Yeah.
It was that heavy like vampire, which they do have vampire doujinshi.
Yes.
It was like that, like, will they, won't they, crawling into her bedroom. And that's like such a teenage, like we saw that in Scream. We saw that in Clarissa Explains It All. It's like such a teenage trope. But like, that's what we think of teenagers, like, how am I going to sneak out and get my teenage boyfriend? And like, I think in that context, it's like, it's, you know, people are prudes is what I'm saying.
Like, totally. I was just going to say, there's a lot of really good My Hero Academia doujinshi that is the,
I was
like,
going to say,
that's just about like the relationship between the characters. Now, be warned, if you're freaked out and I respect it that you're like, but they're teenagers, I don't want to see any sexy stuff with teenagers. And I get that. I respect that. But again, it's like, it is largely teenagers hooking up with other people their own age. So, but just beware is what I'm saying. But there's a lot of good, not sexy stuff there as well. And just some really good, good art.
And I want to say, if you're a parent, instead of being like my parents who got sex books from the library and just left them in my bedroom and didn't talk to me about them, just like rented them and put them out there. And it was, you know, two couples like going at it, or like, this is what happens when you start growing hair here. You can always give these more YA focused art and comics to your teen who is, you know, exploring or whatever.
Yes.
So they feel seen and okay and you know,
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned hair because in doujinshi, usually everybody is as smooth as a baby's butt.
That's true. Yeah, everyone in doujinshi waxes.
Yeah. To answer your question, Danny, I think I would say if you know anime, if you have an anime that you like, and if you know that it's popular, mm-hmm. you most likely will be able to find a very wide range of things like Emma said.
Mm-hmm.
I think just go to a reputable fan work site like My Reading Manga.
You have to beware of these websites. The ads on these websites are more aggressive than most of the content.
Okay, that's careful. Very true. I block those out because I'm just so used to it. My Reading Manga or another site like that. Careful, you know, don't go to anything that looks too seedy.
Yeah.
And
don't click any links.
Yes.
Stay on the website.
Use the filtering. Use the filtering functions. They're very great. They have filtering functions so that way you can search up Shonen I or BL and not search for smut or porn.
Yeah.
Are there any, so this is a great question from Joelle, mm-hmm. Monique, our producer. Are there any characters whose work better in doujinshi than in their original book or property?
Oh, crap.
Ooh.
I think that's such an interesting question, right? Because the reason why people would make a doujinshi about a work is because they really resonate with the character to the point that where they would want to labor over drawing them and write an entirely new story. Because,
totally.
You know, doing both drawing and writing the story and all of that is a lot of work. So
yeah, I don't know if it's so much that like they necessarily work better in the fan derivative works. However, I will say, you know, bringing it back to something like for me in my early doujinshi reading days with like a Gundam Wing, part of the reason that that show was so successful is because there was this really dedicated female fan base around it that were creating all of this shonen-ai and this yaoi content around it. It wasn't even so much a like, oh, this is better, but you know, the show was animated in 95. So at the time, you would get a lot more like detail in terms of drawing the characters' faces and such in manga. And so for me, like reading some of that doujinshi, I'm like, dang, like Zex looks pretty good in the show, but he looks real good here. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I would say that. I don't know if I've ever seen a work that I feel like is better. I think there's a sense of building off of something that's a good foundation, right? Because it's kind of like how not every anime is like Yuri on Ice, where it's the romance is clearly there.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of works where me and Emma see that are about subtext and purely subtext because, you know, it was made a while ago or something and, you know, it was not safe for them to create something like that.
So
for me, it's more about like, an easy example is Studio Trigger's Promare, right? Like there is subtext and something is implied to be there. And so it's great that there is fan works that exist to kind of turn that subtext into non-subtext and to make it real.
Yeah.
I know that this is pretty cool that many Japanese publishing companies actually sponsor annual manga competitions in which the winner is awarded the publication of their winning story. So they'll end up publishing it. So are there other stories that you've heard of doujinshi artists who end up going on to being manga and animators?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the most famous example is Clamp. Clamp, who created Cardcaptor Sakura, Chobits, X-1999, Tokyo Babylon, they have a huge, huge body of work. And they were a doujinshi circle. And to this day, they still all work together to publish all of their work. But I mean, they started off as a doujinshi circle. They were writing Yoroiden Samurai Troopers doujinshi. They were writing Devilman doujinshi. You can still find it. It's amazing. And then, you know, they were so talented that they went on to be like some of the most successful women mangaka that there are.
Yes, we stan. Love Cardcaptor Sakura and Code Geass.
Yeah.
And also, it's so funny because they've created such an interesting body of work that they literally created Tsubasa Chronicles that literally takes characters from their existing original IPs and puts them together in its own universe. It's very, very funny and very epic.
Well, I imagine this is like a portfolio for them.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
like
totally.
It's a portfolio, and then it, you know, amassed to having like thousands, sometimes millions of like readers.
Mm-hmm.
So now that the digital, now that we have things like Patreon and other sites, like has it, because y'all own physical copies of Doujinshi that you can order, but like,
right,
that you could, you, but like, do people now have their own
Patreon
type of?
It's really interesting because I have definitely seen that happen more and more now with people that do have Patreons, that they will sort of publish full comics that are behind the paywall of their Patreon, which is awesome. And obviously you have things now like Webtoon, and there's so many more ways that people can distribute their original work and, you know, get compensation for it because of the internet.
Yeah, I frequent many a Patreon. That's all I'll say about that.
Well, we'll definitely, y'all can shoot me over some of your favorites and we can include links for everyone. Yeah. This has been a great intro to Doujinshi 101, just talking about, you know, how it got started, how we got started into it. Emma, where can everyone catch you?
You can find me all over the internet, at my name, Emma Fife, wherever Emma Fifes are sold. I got a lot of projects and things that I'm working on, a lot of stuff that hasn't been announced yet, so I'm not gonna announce it, so just make sure you're following me on Twitter, and then also you can find me on my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/EmmaFife. I typically stream Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, starting at noon, though because of other work stuff that I'm working on right now, my schedule's been a little wonky, so, you know, social media, it's the place to be.
Love it. What about you, Chris?
You can find me anywhere at One Winged Chris. It's like one winged angel, like Sephiroth. And also, please catch me and Emma's podcast, Not Safe for Weebs.
Oh, yeah, duh.
I was trying to decide whether or not I should be like, wait, Emma, don't we have a podcast? Just super, super cheese ad, right?
Amazing.
So Emma and Chris have an entire podcast that's dedicated to Doujinshi and talking about it and their favorites. And each week they bring on someone. I was on for one to talk about Vegeta and Bulma, which is my favorite pairing.
If he was on it also.
Yeah. So, and I remember it started, I think, from a conversation that we were all having.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was Danny basically had tweeted something saying like, don't send me porn. I don't want it. Unless it's Vegeta, Bulma, Doujinshi, then please send it to me. So I jumped in and I was like, I would also like it.
It's not hard to find good ones, but when you find good
ones,
they're great
and you want to share. Yeah, for sure.
Yes. Yep.
I am at Ms. Dani Fernandez on all the things. Remember that I will be on Sci-Fi's The Great Debate this Woohoo! Month. I'm in two episodes. I'm not sure exactly when they drop. I think I'm in this week's, maybe, or next week's.
All right.
But I'm definitely in the last episode, which we shot right the day that I think we had to shelter in place.
Oh,
so
dang.
There was no studio audience on that last final episode. Very fascinating. And they also like checked our temperatures at the set, and like we were all like set to go, and then it was like, are we going to do this? So it was all of us just making each other laugh. It's a really good time and a really good show, so I don't know, if you see it, screenshot it for me and tag me. And we are going to, this week we'll post some of our favorite doujinshi so you can see what we're talking about, and hopefully you can get into it too, and again, supporting independent artists. So like we always say, stay nerdy.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like...
Whoa.
And...
Hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country.
So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.